Chapter 26. It was a bright autumn Sunday, 16 years after Silas Marner had found his new treasure on the hearth. The bells of the old Raveloe church were ringing the cheerful peal which told that the morning service was ended, and out of the arched doorway in the tower came slowly, retarded by friendly greetings and questions, the richer parishioners who had chosen this bright Sunday morning as eligible for church going. It was the rural fashion of that time for the more important members of the congregation to depart first, while their humbler neighbors waited and looked on, stroking their bent heads or dropping their curtsies to any large ratepayer who turned to notice them. Foremost among these advancing groups of well-clad people, there are some whom we shall recognize, in spite of time, who has laid his hand on them all. The tall blond man of 40 is not much changed in feature from the Godfrey Cass of 26. He is only fuller in flesh, and has only lost the indefinable look of youth, the loss which is marked, even when the eye is undulled, and the wrinkles are not yet come. Perhaps the pretty woman, not much younger than he, who is leaning on his arm, is more changed than her husband. The lovely bloom, that used to be always on her cheek, now comes but fitfully, with the fresh morning air, or with some strong surprise. Yet to all who love human faces best for what they tell of human experience, Nancy's beauty has a heightened interest. Often the soul is ripened into fuller goodness, while age has spread an ugly film, so that mere glances can never divine the preciousness of the fruit. But the years have not been so cruel to Nancy. The firm yet placid mouth, the clear voracious glance of the brown eyes, speak now of a nature that has been tested, and has kept its highest qualities. And even the costume, with its dainty neatness and purity, has more significance now the coquetries of youth can have nothing to do with it. Mr. and Mrs. Godfrey Cass, any higher title has died away from Raveloe lips since the old squire was gathered to his fathers, and his inheritance was divided, have turned round to look for the tall-aged man, and the plainly dressed woman who are a little behind Nancy, having observed that they must wait for Athier and Priscilla, and now they all turn into a narrower path leading across the churchyard to a small gate opposite the Red House. We will not follow them now, for may there not be some others in this departing congregation whom we should like to see again, some of those who are not likely to be handsomely clad, and whom we may not recognize so easily as the master and mistress of the Red House? But it is impossible to mistake Silas Marner. His large brown eyes seem to have gathered a longer vision, as is the way with eyes that have been short-sighted in early life, and they have a less vague, a more answering gaze, but in everything else one sees signs of a frame much enfeebled by the lapse of the 16 years. The weaver's bent shoulders and white hair give him almost the look of advanced age, though he is not more than 55, but there is the freshest blossom of youth close by his side, a blonde dimpled girl of 18, who has vainly tried to chastise her curly auburn hair into smoothness under her brown bonnet. The hair ripples as obstinately as a brooklet under the March breeze, and the little ringlets burst away from the restraining comb behind, and show themselves below the bonnet crown. Eppie cannot help being rather vexed about her hair, for there is no other girl in Raveloe who has hair at all like it, and she thinks hair ought to be smooth. She does not like to be blameworthy even in small things. You see how neatly her prayer book is folded in her spotted handkerchief. That good-looking young fellow, in a new fustian suit, who walks behind her, is not quite sure upon the question of hair in the abstract, when Eppie puts it to him, and thinks that perhaps straight hair is the best in general, but he doesn't want Eppie's hair to be different. She surely divines that there is someone behind her who is thinking about her very particularly, and mustering courage to come to her side as soon as they are out in the lane, else why should she look rather shy and take care not to turn away her head from her father Silas, to whom she keeps murmuring little sentences as to who was at church and who was not at church, and how pretty the red mountain ash is over the rectory wall. I wish we had a little garden, father, with double daisies in, like Mrs. Winthrop's, said Eppie, when they were out in the lane. Only they say it'd take a deal of digging and bringing fresh soil, and you couldn't do that, could you, Father? Anyhow, I shouldn't like you to do it, for it'd be too hard work for you. Yes, I could do it, child, if you want a bit o' garden. These long evenings, I could work at taking in a little bit o' the waste, just enough for a root or two o' flowers for you. And again, I the morning, I could have a turn why the spade, before I sat down to the loom. Why didn't you tell me before as you wanted a bit o' garden? I can dig it for you, Master Marner, said the young man in fustian, who was now by Eppie's side, entering into the conversation without the trouble of formalities. T'LLB play to me after I've done my day's work, or any odd bits o' time when the work's slack. And I'll bring you some soil from Mr. Cass's garden he'll let me, and willing. Hey, Aaron, my lad, are you there? Said Silas. I wasn't aware of you, for when Eppie's talking o' things, I see nothing but what she's a-saying. Well, if you could help me with the digging, we might get her a bit o' garden all the sooner. Then, if you think well and good, said Aaron, I'll come to the stone pits this afternoon, and we'll settle what land's to be taken in, and I'll get up an hour earlier i' the morning, and begin on it. But not if you don't promise me not to work at the hard digging, Father, said Eppie. Or I shouldn't ha' said anything about it, she added, half bashfully, half roguishly, only Mrs. Winthrop said as Aaron 'ud be so good, and you might ha' known it without mother telling you, said Aaron. And E. Master Marner knows too, I hope, as I'm able and willing to do a turn o' work for him, and he won't do me any unkindness to anyways, take it out o' my hands. There, now, Father, you won't work in it till it's all easy, said Eppie, and you and me can mark out the beds, and make holes and plant the roots. It'll be a deal livelier at the stone pits, when we've got some flowers, for I always think the flowers can see us, and know what we're talking about. And I'll have a bit o' rosemary, and bergamot, and thyme, because they're so sweet-smelling. But there's no lavender only in the gentlefolks' gardens, I think. That's no reason why you shouldn't have some, said Aaron, for I can bring you slips of anything. I'm forced to cut no end of 'em when I'm gardening, and throw 'em away mostly. There's a big bed o' lavender at the Red House. The missus is very fond of it. Well, said Silas, gravely, so as you don't make free for us, or ask for anything as is worth much at the Red House. For Mr. Cass has been so good to us, and built us up the new end o' the cottage, and given us beds and things, as I couldn't abide to be imposing for garden stuff or anything else. No, no, there's no imposing, said Aaron. There's never a garden in all the parish, but what there's endless waste in it for want o' somebody as could use everything up. It's what I think to myself sometimes, as there need nobody run short o' victuals, if the ill, and was made the most on, and there was never a morsel, but what could find its way to a mouth. It sets one thinking o' that gardening does. But I must go back now, else mother'll be in trouble as I aren't there. Bring her with you this afternoon, Aaron, said Eppie. I shouldn't like to fix about the garden, and her not know everything from the first, should you, Father? Aye, bring her if you can, Aaron, said Silas. She's sure to have a word to say as'll help us to set things on their right end. Aaron turned back up the village, while Silas and Eppie went on up the lonely sheltered lane. Oh, Daddy, she began, when they were in privacy, clasping and squeezing Silas's arm, and skipping round to give him an energetic kiss. Why, little old Daddy, I'm so glad. I don't think I shall want anything else, when we've got a little garden, and I knew Aaron would dig it for us, she went on with roguish triumph, knew that very well. You're a deep little puss, you are, said Silas, with the mild passive happiness of love-crowned age in his face, but you'll make yourself fine and beholden to Aaron. Oh, no, I shan't, said Eppie, laughing and frisking. He likes it. Come, come, let me carry your prayer book, else you'll be dropping it, jumping I that way. Eppie was now aware that her behavior was under observation, but it was only the observation of a friendly donkey, browsing with a log fastened to his foot, a meek donkey, not scornfully critical of human trivialities, but thankful to share in them, if possible, by getting his nose scratched. And Eppie did not fail to gratify him with her usual notice, though it was attended with the inconvenience of his following them, painfully, up to the very door of their home. But the sound of a sharp bark inside, as Eppie put the key in the door, modified the donkey's views, and he limped away again without bidding. The sharp bark was the sign of an excited welcome that was awaiting them from a knowing brown terrier, who, after dancing at their legs, in a hysterical manner, rushed with a worrying noise at a tortoise-shell kitten under the loom, and then rushed back with a sharp bark again, as much as to say, "I have done my duty by this feeble creature, you perceive." While the lady mother of the kitten sat sunning her white bosom in the window, and looked round with a sleepy air of expecting caresses, though she was not going to take any trouble for them. The presence of this happy animal life was not the only change which had come over the interior of the stone cottage. There was no bed now in the living room, and the small space was well filled with decent furniture, all bright and clean enough to satisfy Dolly Winthrop's eye. The oaken table and three-cornered oaken chair were hardly what was likely to be seen in so poor a cottage. They had come, with the beds and other things, from the Red House, for Mr. Godfrey Cass, as everyone said in the village, did very kindly by the weaver, and it was nothing but right a man should be looked on, and helped by those who could afford it, when he had brought up an orphan child, and been father and mother to her, and had lost his money too, so as he had nothing but what he worked for week by week, and when the weaving was going down too, for there was less and less flax spun, and Master Marner was none so young. Nobody was jealous of the weaver, for he was regarded as an exceptional person, whose claims on neighborly help were not to be matched in Raveloe. Any superstition that remained concerning him had taken an entirely new color, and Mr. Macy, now a very feeble old man of 86, never seen except in his chimney corner or sitting in the sunshine at his door sill, was of opinion that when a man had done what Silas had done by an orphan child, it was a sign that his money would come to light again, or leastwise that the robber would be made to answer for it, for, as Mr. Macy observed of himself, his faculties were as strong as ever. Silas sat down now, and watched Eppie with a satisfied gaze as she spread the clean cloth, and set on it the potato pie, warmed up slowly in a safe Sunday fashion, by being put into a dry pot over a slowly dying fire, as the best substitute for an oven. For Silas would not consent to have a grate and oven added to his conveniences. He loved the old brick hearth as he had loved his brown pot, and was it not there when he had found Eppie? The gods of the hearth exist for us still, and let all new faith be tolerant of that fetishism, lest it bruise its own roots. Silas ate his dinner more silently than usual, soon laying down his knife and fork, and watching half-abstractedly Eppie's play with Snap and the cat, by which her own dining was made rather a lengthy business. Yet it was a sight that might well arrest wandering thoughts. Eppie, with the rippling radiance of her hair, and the whiteness of her rounded chin and throat set off by the dark blue cotton gown, laughing merrily as the kitten held on with her four claws to one shoulder, like a design for a jug handle, while Snap on the right hand and Puss on the other put up their paws towards a morsel which she held out of the reach of both, Snap occasionally desisting in order to remonstrate with the cat by a cogent worrying growl on the greediness and futility of her conduct, till Eppie relented, caressed them both, and divided the morsel between them. But at last Eppie, glancing at the clock, checked the play, and said, "Oh, Daddy, you're wanting to go into the sunshine to smoke your pipe. But I must clear away first, so as the house may be tidy when Godmother comes. I'll make haste, I won't be long." Silas had taken to smoking a pipe daily during the last 2 years, having been strongly urged to it by the sages of Raveloe, as a practice suit for the fits. and this advice was sanctioned by Dr. Kimball, on the ground that it was as well to try what could do no harm, a principle which was made to answer for a great deal of work in that gentleman's medical practice. Silas did not highly enjoy smoking, and often wondered how his neighbors could be so fond of it, but a humble sort of acquiescence in what was held to be good had become a strong habit of that new self which had been developed in him since he had found Eppy on his hearth. It had been the only clue his bewildered mind could hold by in cherishing this young life that had been sent to him out of the darkness into which his gold had departed. By seeking what was needful for Eppy, by sharing the effect that everything produced on her, he had himself come to appropriate the forms of custom and belief which were the mold of Raveloe life, and as, with reawakening sensibilities, memory also reawakened, he had begun to ponder over the elements of his old faith, and blend them with his new impressions, till he recovered a consciousness of unity between his past and present. The sense of presiding goodness and the human trust which come with all pure peace and joy had given him a dim impression that there had been some error, some mistake, which had thrown that dark shadow over the days of his best years, and as it grew more and more easy to him to open his mind to Dolly Winthrop, he gradually communicated to her all he could describe of his early life. The communication was necessarily a slow and difficult process, for Silas's meager power of explanation was not aided by any readiness of interpretation in Dolly, whose narrow outward experience gave her no key to strange customs, and made every novelty a source of wonder that arrested them at every step of the narrative. It was only by fragments, and at intervals which left Dolly time to revolve what else he had heard till it acquired some familiarity for her, that Silas at last arrived at the climax of the sad story, the drawing of lots, and its false testimony concerning him, and this had to be repeated in several interviews, under new questions on her part, as to the nature of this plan for detecting the guilty and clearing the innocent. And yours the same Bible, you're sure o' that, Master Marner, the Bible as you brought why you from that country, it's the same as what they've got at church, and what Eppy's a learning to read in. Yes, said Silas, every bit the same, and there's drawing o' lots in the Bible, mind you, he added in a lower tone. Oh, dear, dear, said Dolly in a grieved voice, as if she were hearing an unfavorable report of a sick man's case. She was silent for some minutes. At last she said, there's wise folks, happen, as know how it all is. The parson knows, I'll be bound. But it takes big words to tell them things, and such as poor folks can't make much out on. I can never rightly know the meaning o' what I hear at church, only a bit here and there, but I know it's good words I do. But what lies you o' here? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.